Hello, welcome to Storytime. This is Geraldine Colleran, and today I'd like to read you a story by a lady called Viv MacDade, who was born in Belfast and still lives in Ireland. She was brought up in Africa, and the story was written about Africa. So I'm telling you that because some of the vegetation might not sound familiar to you. The name of the story is A Gift from My Mother by Viv MacDade. In the year I turned 10, I picked my mother a bunch of wildflowers in the bushveld behind our house. Tiny star-shaped flowers with white on the top and pink underneath. Daisies the colour of egg yolks and a sprig from a lucky bean creeper. "They're beautiful," she said, turning the little bunch to look at the shape and the colour of each flower, the red and black lucky beans snug in their dry brown pod. She arranged the flowers in a jar of water and put them on the windowsill beside the stove so she could see them while she was cooking. "I love a fresh flower in the house," she said in her dreamy voice. "If I had my time over, Lucy, I'd have everything just perfect, nothing but the best." I knew she was thinking about the houses on the other side of the railway line. Houses with hallways and moulded skirting boards and neighbours who didn't go down to the shops with chiffon scarves over their curlers. But that evening there weren't on her mind long enough to make her angry or sad. And after a little while, she moved the jar of flowers along the windowsill into the sunlight. And she was humming when she wiped down the sink. I sat at the kitchen table doing my maths homework until I heard Dad's car and ran out to meet him. He opened the door and leaned out to kiss me. "Hello, my precious." "My mother hates that." "For God's sake, it's a wonder the child hasn't grown up thinking her name is My Precious." "I was the only one who could spell illiterate," I tell him. "Fantastic. You're the best speller I know." I'm stuck with a maths problem. If 8 men dig a ditch in 2 hours, how many 8-hour days will it take 2 men to dig the same ditch? We'll work it out when we put our minds to it. He's very good at explaining things and never makes you feel nervous or stupid. My mother thinks his job at the garage isn't much, but he's a far better teacher than Mrs. Emerson. He wiped his shoes on the mat before we went into the kitchen. "Hello," he said, as if he was asking a question. And my mother's voice was tired and small when she answered him. He took a deep breath and slapped the little brown envelope of wages down on the table. "How much is there this week?" asked my mother and gave a little laugh. "As much as I've earned, that's how much. What you've earned isn't enough for us to live on." "Then die on it," he said, walking out of the kitchen, "because it's all there is." My mother snatched a pot from the cupboard, banged it into the sink and opened the tap so wide the water ran over the top. After she switched off the tap, she looked out the window for a long time. It was getting dark outside when she told me to set the table. I switched on the light and she pulled the curtains closed, leaving the jar of flowers in the darkness. Next day after school, I went around the back of the supermarket and searched for a box in the yard. Most were cardboard and too big or too deep, but in the end I found a shallow wooden peach box that was perfect. At home, I put tins of water in the box, changed into my old clothes and went out the back gate with the box and scissors from the kitchen. The paths that led through the bush over to the factories on the road to the airport were sharp and clean, but I chose an overgrown path. The leaves of the masasa tree were shiny and the sun made it look as if there were diamonds on the big granite boulders. After a while, my arms got tired holding the box, so I sat on the edge of the path and watched a line of polished black ants follow each other into the long yellow grass and listened to birds calling pt, pt from the trees. I left the box in the shade of a boulder. The ground felt hot through my sandals and the long dry grass scraped my legs. There were all kinds of daisies, tiny and white and yellow and orange ones as big as my hand. I cut the stems as long as I could and took each handful back to the box to put them in water. I was reaching over a clump of blackjacks to cut off their flowers and they'd scattered their tiny black spikes on my t-shirt and shorts when I spotted my first flame lily. Its wavy swept back petals bright red at the top and yellow at the bottom, exactly as if it were on fire. Mrs. Emerson had shown us a picture and told us it was illegal to pick them, and you were very lucky if you saw one. I longed to give my mother something so beautiful and precious, but shivered at the thought of becoming a criminal. I was lucky to find a big bush full of tiny white candle-shaped flowers with yellow tips and trumpets of wishweed, with black spots in their hearts. A long creeper of wild spinach had lots of flowers, but their stems weren't long enough to go in a bunch. In places where the leaves of the masasa tree were starting to turn different colours, I cut delicate gold and red sprigs. By the time I got home, the long grass was making shadows across the path, and I'd worked out everything I needed to do. I laid out the flowers and divided them into 10 bunches, some all one kind of flower, others different flowers but shades of the same colour, and others I mixed up. I made daisy chains out of string and used them to tie up the flowers before arranging in the bunches in the tins of water and putting my purse in the box beside them. On the street, I decided not to start with the Du Toits or the Thompsons because they lived beside us and might tell my mother. Instead, I walked 5 streets away and went to the house at the end. It felt safer to start with strangers. There was a tricycle in the garden and a puddle of water around the sprinkler in the middle of the yellowy lawn. A safety chain held the front door slightly open, and inside a voice on the radio was talking about a shop that had been burgled and a man who was helping the police with their investigation. A woman's voice called out, "I'm telling you for the last time, put those toys away." I knocked on the door, a soft knock at first, and then louder. I was thinking about leaving and going next door when I heard flip-flops slapping to the door. A woman carrying a baby, so small his head had hardly any hair and his cheek was squashed against her shoulder, looked through the gap in the doorway. "Good afternoon," I said. "Would you like to buy some flowers for 6 pence a bunch?" A telephone started ringing in the house and she hesitated for a moment as if she might go to answer it, then changed her mind. "Flowers," she said. "You must be joking." She turned her head. "I'm not going to say it again. Put those toys away this minute." Then she looked at me again, took the chain off and opened the door. "Does your mother know what you're doing, pet?" "No," I said, "I'm going to surprise her." "Well, your flowers are beautiful. It cheers me up just looking at them." She took one of the mixed bunches into the house, and when she came back, she gave me a 6 pence and 4 toffees in waxy white paper with blue writing. "You be careful crossing the road with that box," she said. On the way out, I put down the box and closed the gate, then opened it again when I remembered that that's how I found it. In the garden 2 houses down, a man was pruning a creamy rose bush beside his veranda, standing back a little to look at it and pinching his cheek slowly before he cut off each branch. He turned when he heard the click of the gate latch and put his head to one side as he walked down the drive to meet me. "Those look nice," he said. "Do you think you might like some?" "Of course I would like some," he said. "What are you charging?" "6 pence a bunch," I said, and immediately wished I'd lowered my price. "Bring them up here," he said, going onto the veranda. "I'll go in and get my wife so we can choose together." His wife was round and quick with a smile that took her whole face. "What will you do with the money you get from the flowers?" "It's going to be a surprise." "That's nice," said the man. "For my mother," I said. His wife loved all the flowers, but the little white daisies were her favourite because she said, "Definitely these," when her husband asked, "What'll we get?" In the end, they bought 3 bunches, daisies for the kitchen and 2 mixed bunches for the lounge. The man fetched his wallet and gave me 2 shillings. "There you go," he said, "and you can keep the change." When I looked back from the gate, he held up his thumb and called out, "Good luck!" I could feel the purse in my pocket and I knew the flowers were even more beautiful than I'd thought. People were friendly and interested to know my name and where I lived and if my mother was at home. And although the bunches with the longest stems went first, nearly everyone found it hard to know which ones to choose. At one house, a boy with pimples and a black T-shirt that said, "So what?" in pink writing on the front, came to the door with a cigarette in his hand. He looked at the 2 bunches I had left. "So how much money have you made?" 4 shillings and 6 pence so far," I said. "Cool. Almost enough to buy yourself some wheels. Look here, my old lady is out at the moment, but if she wasn't, I reckon she'd buy." In less than an hour, I'd sold the 10 bunches and went home with the purse full of money. I emptied it onto the kitchen table and made a little tower of each kind of coin. 5 and 6 pence, 5 shillings for the flowers and at the extra 6 pence from the people who bought 3 bunches. I thought about boiling the kettle and setting out the cups. I'd make the tea when I heard the bus, and when we were settled at the table, I'd casually show her the money. But I was too excited to stick to the plan, so I washed my face and legs, changed into fresh shorts and my lace collar blouse, ran down the road to the bus stop and sat on the verge, jiggling my legs against the fat purse in my pocket. The bus pulled in and my mother was sitting right at the front. As soon as she got up from her seat, she saw me and waved and hugged me against her when she came down the steps. "That blouse is lovely," she said. "You're a good girl to come down to the bus in it." I took the shopping bag from her and saw there was milk and a packet of meat. "Are we having chops?" I asked. "Chops," she said. "Where would the money come from for chops?" "I've got a present for you." "A present," she said. "Have you really?" In the kitchen, I opened the purse and emptied it out onto the table. "It's for you. It's the present." She looked at the money and then at me. "Where did this money come from?" "I got it from flowers, flowers like the ones I gave you." "What are you talking about, Lucy?" I started to tell her about the peach box I'd found in the yard behind the supermarket, the daisy change and the flowers, but before I could finish, she slapped the table hard with both hands. "Are you telling me, are you really telling me that you went around the neighbours selling bits of flowers you got from the bush?" She sat down like an old woman and put her elbows on the table and her head in her hands. A big sob came out of her, and when she looked up, her face was twisted and wet. "People will think I sent you. They'll think I dressed you up and sent you out to sell flowers from the bush." "I didn't dress up," I said. "I dressed up for you."
"Look at you."
She pressed her fingers against her eyes and shook her head.
"I want you to go back. Go and give the money back. Tell them your mother won't let you keep it."
"I don't want to keep it," I said. "It's for you."
"Listen to what I'm saying, Lucy. You are to say your mother will not allow you to keep the money. That's what you must say." I went back with my purse to each of the houses and told the people I had to give back the money. "Well, if that's what your mother wants," some said. Other asked why I had to give it back, but I wasn't able to tell them. The man and his wife, who had bought the three bunches, weren't at home, so I left the money on the mat in front of their door. The last person I went to was the woman who'd bought the first bunch and given me the toffees. "Look," she said, "I don't know what all this is about, but you can tell your mother I will not give back the flowers. If she's not happy with that, she can come up here to me and we'll talk about it." I walked home thinking about how everyone else had taken back their money as though it had nothing to do with flowers. "Well," said my mother, "what did they say? Did you tell them your mother wouldn't let you keep the money?" I put the sixpence on the table. "One woman wouldn't take it. She said you can go and see her about it."
"What woman?"
"I don't know. She lives in the big yellow house near the shop." My mother reached across the table for her handbag.
"I have nothing to say to her or to any of them," she said.
She put the coin in her purse and then went over to the sink. Her knife was sharp and fast against the potatoes, and the water splashed when she threw them into the pot.